Shenichnas Adam Marbim L'Simcha, when other comes in, we're Marbe B'Simcha. The pasuk says, "P'kudei Hashem Yishar Mesam Chelev," that the words of the Kadosh Baruch Hu are Mesamech Lev. They make us happy. The Torah that we learn is something that gives Simcha to our hearts. We have a tremendous schus and honor to have Rav Shechter with us this morning, who will share with us "P'kudei Hashem Yishar Mesam Chelev," words of Hashem that are Mesamech Lev. It is a we're working Rav Shechter a little hard this morning, you know. But I remember that Rav Shechter many times in the past has said that when a Rav comes, you should work him hard. You should ask him questions. You should he's here to teach Torah. So Baruch Hashem, we have a great schus that all the shirim, all of us together on yeshiva level, will hear from Rav Shechter. And this morning, every single shir on an individual level, we'll hear from Rav Shechter. And I know that Rav Shechter is one of the people that more than any other Rav, he's thirsty for Talmidim to come and ask him questions, and so he can share his Torah with us. So we thank Rav Shechter very much for dedicating this morning to spend with us.
So far, I'm not working hard. So far, I enjoyed the davening. I enjoyed the breakfast. So far, everything is great.
What are the parameters of Kol Isha with regards to radio or CD or microphone or zmirot and all those?
Zmirot, the minhag olam is lahakel. The reason for Kol Isha is because it'll be ma'ara taiva. If you hear a woman sing with a good voice, so it'll be ma'ara taiva. So the poskim, the chidor, has this kula that maybe the prohibition of Kol Isha only applies to secular songs. If they're singing Shirei Kodesh, maybe it doesn't apply. Then he has another svara. Maybe if you have a group of people singing together, maybe you can say Trei Koli Lo Mishtami. So this Sridi Yesh has a famous tshuva. He was asked after the Second World War. There were youth groups like Bnei Akiva, that type. So the Aguda people had youth groups, but had mixed groups, and they used to sing zmiras together. A lot of them were orphans. They had no parents to raise them. So this is like Bnei Akiva. You sing together. So he said that you can rely on these poskim, the tziruf of the both svaras together. When he writes, the Sridi Yesh burnt in Slabodka. And and then when he came to Germany, he was surprised to see that the women, the Yekis was so from, he was surprised to see that the women were singing Zmiras with the men. He was taken aback, so he asked around quietly. So they told him that it was approved both by Rabbi Hildesheimer from Hildesheimer Seminary in Berlin, as well as by Rabbi Hirsch in Frankfurt. They both approved it, and it was based on this idea from the Chidor. Chidor was from the 1700s, that the tzira for these two svaras is enough to be made. About singing, women singing over the radio, even if they're singing live, but you don't see them, and their voices are transmitted. So some of the Gdolim in Europe, the Rav from Kishinev, has a tshuva about that. I forgot his name. He has a tshuva about that, so he's makel on that. He says that the Gemara has a svara that the Yetzirah is only shalit on a woman if you see her, if she's in front of you. If you don't see the woman, so then there's no Yetzirah. So if you hear the voice, but you don't see the woman, so there's room to be mekel. So that's what he's mekel by radio. If you have a loudspeaker, no, there's room to be mekel, but it's not right. Should not be mekel.
Do you have to wash on pizza?
Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was asked, and he paskened that one piece of pizza you say mezonos and two pieces of pizza you say hamotzi. So I always thought that Rav Moshe probably didn't explain to him what pizza was. He probably didn't understand. But they told me that he asked 1,001 shailos. He asked 1,001 questions before he gave that psalm. But we don't follow that. We don't follow that opinion. We hold that pizza is regular bread. You have to say hamotzi on pizza. It's like regular bread. The din is that if you bake a cake, you have a filling. Let's say you have a pie. So you have a cherry pie, you have cherry filling, or you have apple pie, you have apples in the middle or something like that. So that's a kiss, that's like a pocket. So that's called pasa bobikisnin. You have dough on top and dough on bottom, and you have like a pocket, the filling inside. So that's a nash, that's a snack. So So that's bari mina mizonis. But the Shulchan Aruch says, what if you have dough on top and dough on the bottom, then you put cheese in the middle? So you bake the sandwich. So that doesn't become a pasa bobekis. You bake it. Instead of baking the bread separately, making the cheese separately, putting the cheese into the bread after you bake the bread, you break the bread with the cheese in it. Or you bake the bread, the dough on top, dough on bottom, and you have flesh in the middle. So you made a salami sandwich. Milachatchila, you bake the bread with the salami, with the flesh inside. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that that's hamoitzi. So that's why we assume that it's not right. We assume most rabbanim in the OU assume that pizza is always hamoitzi.
How long must our prayers be on an ideal level
or on a basic level? The Shulchan Aruch says the prayers should go down to the bone. And then the later Achrayim say that that's chumrah. The Mikra Din is a little above the bone. There's Pas HaRosh and Pas HaZokan, different pace. So Pas, we are Mekel, the Pas HaZokan, you're allowed to shave with a shaver. And Pas HaRosh, shaver or with a powder, whatever, cream, to remove it. And the Pas HaRosh, you're not allowed to shave even with a shaver. Not all the Rishonim agree, but that's our, we follow Tosfos. Tosfos claims that that's what it says in the Talmud Bavli. That's how it sounds in the Gemara. So the Shulchan Aruch says the pei pas haroish shouldn't be cut off, even with a shaver. So the Shulchan Aruch recommends till the bone. So that's considered a chumrah, a little above the bone. Mikar Adin is enough. That's the question. Where does the Rosh end and where does the Zakan begin? So Rav Moshe used to say that you have to look at a young child. How far down? Young children don't have a beard, but they have pas haroish. So wherever the beard didn't grow by a young child, so that's the Zakan. And up until that point, that's the Rosh. That's above the bone. So the Shulchan Aruch is recommending that that's Chumrah. Shulchan Aruch recommends also till the bottom of the ear. So the Achrayim say, it doesn't mean the soft part of the ear, it means the hard part of the ear. Till the hard part of the ear. That's a Chumrah. That's assumed to be a Chumrah.
If you see someone violating the halacha, you're not sure whether, like, you know that he doesn't know about that halacha, and you're not sure whether or not, if you tell him, he'll listen to you or not. What do you do?
The Gemara says if you're positive that the fellow's not going to listen, if you're absolutely positive, then kishem shemitzvah lo medava nishma, kach mitzvah shaloy lo medava sheinu nishma, then you don't tell him. But if you think there's a chance that maybe yes, maybe no, then you have to try to tell him that that's not the right way to go. But there's a problem, there's a difficulty in giving tochocha to anybody. Reb Tarfon was a Tana, he lived in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, he lived with the Churban HaBayis. Gemara says, he tells over stories, he remembers what happened during the days of the Beis Hamikdash. So Reb Tarfon says already, Ein lona l'adora, b'adora zeh mishia deh l'achiyach. We don't have people in our generation who know how to give tochocha. You have to give tochocha to people and the language that they understand. So just like if someone's going to give me tochocha, he's going to speak in Chinese. Or I'll talk in Yiddish to somebody who doesn't understand Yiddish. What does it help? So even if he talks the same language, but we're on a different wavelength, you're talking from, everyone looks from a different perspective. So if you don't really speak the same language, you're not on the same wavelength as the other person, so you don't know how to talk to him, you don't know how to give tochocha. So Reb Tarfon says, already we don't know how to give tochocha. So you have to try. That's why many poskim, it's famous for Rav Kook, but many other poskim say, this is all before Rav Kook. They say the Gemara has a din that if a person is a balavera and you gave him tochocha and he didn't straighten out, so it's a mitzvah l'snoso, based on a poskim in Tehillim. Misani Hashem esna, v'biskamemecha eskoita. Those who hate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we hate them. Who hates HaKadosh Baruch Hu? A person does an avera and we give him tochocha and he didn't listen. So, but before tochocha, you're not allowed to hate the person. Then we say, you have to the racha kamacha, you have to show love even to a Jew who's doing an avera. But if you warn them already that he's doing an avera, he doesn't listen, then it's a mitzvah l'snosa. So that mitzvah l'snosa doesn't apply bizmanasa, because everybody's considered kodim tochocha. It's not considered lacha tochocha. But you have to try. You have to try. So if it's a person, you have no shaychas at all. You have nothing to do with the person. So usually he's not going to listen to your tochocha. Once in a while, he will listen. You have to try to the best of your ability. It's hard to give tochoch. There was a Rabbi Ruby Aberman. He lives on lives in Beit Vegan. So years ago, he was before communism collapsed. So different groups from America and from England used to send yeshiva students, they used to send young adults to Russia to teach Torah in different places. So he said he went with another fellow, with Rabban Lichtenstein's brother-in-law, who lives in Yerushalayim. They were friendly from Chicago. So they went together. They were sponsored by a women's group in England. So they went from England to Russia, and they had to give shiurim at different locations. So they gave a shiur, and they told them exactly what they have to go to this address and give a shiur on this topic, this gemara, shall I say. They were learning gemara, ksuvas dafayim beis. That's the gemara about covering your hair. Women, married women, have to cover their hair. So he's giving a shiur, he's explaining the gemara. So there's one woman sitting there in the back, and she asked the question, what if by covering your hair, you lose your job? So Rabbi Abraham said he didn't realize the woman was asking halacha lamaisa. What's going to be the din if you lose your job? He thought she's asking, you know, something like this. So he said, oh, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. She never heard it. You never heard about Moshe Feinstein? He said, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says, he has a tshuva about a divorced woman, if she's going to cover her hair, so it's going to be very difficult for her to get a shidduch. As it is, it's difficult for a divorcee to get a shidduch. She would have a nice shekel, it would be a different story. They didn't have nice shekel then. So Rav Moshe has a whole tshuva that divorced women covering the hair is only with the Rabbanon. There are two opinions in Rashi. There's a Rashi on Dafayim Beis and Ksuba that no one understands. Sounds like Rashi says one pshat, and he said the exact same thing the second time. And he said the second pshat is lishnachrin, another pshat. He said the same thing twice. Rav Moshe has a whole shtikal Torah. The Rashi has two opinions, whether the women, married women covering the hair is a mitzvah, or is it a mitzvah to cover the hair, or it's an aver if they don't cover the hair. The difference is, what if you're going to lose your job? So you're not mechuyev to do a mitzvah if you're going to lose your job, but you're going to lose your chance to have a shidduch. You're not mechuyev to extend yourself so far, but in order not to do an avera, that you have to even extend yourself even to the extent of losing your job. So Rav Moshe says that since a divorced woman is only with the Rabbanon, so you can be mekel, svefek the Rabbanon b'kula. But if the woman is still married, is the din d'oraisa, then you have to go to chumra. So he tells over this whole pshat of Rav Moshe Feinstein, tells the woman. Then he comes back the next year, and he has a list of addresses where you should go. Comes back to the same address, the same group of nine people, and this woman is sitting in the back of the group with a big babushka on her head. And after he gave a shiur on something else, whatever, Mishnah, Yisrael, Chumash, whatever happened to be, then after the shiur, he asks, what's the story with that woman? Last year she asked about. They said, yeah, that woman was the head of obstetrics in the hospital. And she never heard of you, and she never heard of Moshe Feinstein, but you said that the din is that you're mechuyev. A woman is mechuyev to cover her hair, even if she's going to lose her job. So the next day she went into the hospital with a big babushka. They fired her on the spot because she was observing a religion. You weren't allowed to observe any religion. Forget about the Jewish religion. You weren't allowed to observe any religion. They fired her on the spot. But they maintained her as a janitor in the hospital. And when there would be a difficult delivery, they would call her into the room, but she's not allowed to touch the patient because she's a janitor. So she would tell the doctor what to do. So look at this. A rabbi gave tochacha. He didn't even realize he was giving tochacha. The woman asked a question, and she listened, and she listened, and she forfeited her job. She never heard of Ruby Aberman. She never heard of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and she listened. But usually it doesn't work that way. Usually it works like that. If you come to someone, you don't know who they are, and you give them tochacha, you say, I don't think you're doing it right. Usually they're not going to listen. But the din is in the Gemara. Strictly speaking, whenever there's a suffix, the person may listen, then you're supposed to give tochacha if you know how to give tochacha. And if you're vaday, then they're not going to listen, then mutab shi yishogi game alo yuhumizi.
I have a two-part question. Is someone able to date a girl if he doesn't plan on marrying her? And how do you define darachiba when it comes to shamanagia?
It's not right to date a girl if you're not going to marry her. Look, if you have mixed groups, you have Bnei Akiva and other groups, mixed groups, they're not dating anybody. So you talk to women like you talk to men, okay. But to date a girl, that's not right. Dating means that you're interested in getting married. It's not right to have such a situation. How do you define derech iba? Derech iba means that there's going to be some erotic pleasure. When you hear a girl sing, there is erotic pleasure. Can't deny it. When you see a girl's beautiful hair, if the hair is loose, there certainly is pleasure. When you hold hands with a girl, there certainly is erotic pleasure. If you just shake hands with someone, so strictly shake hands with a woman in the bank, whatever, or in business, something like that. So strictly speaking, shaking hands with a woman is really mutter. if it's possible to be a machmer, so it certainly could die. But strictly speaking, that's not really prohibited. Let's say a brother and a sister, so they sometimes kiss, they hug, whatever. So strictly speaking, that's mutter. The Rambam says that it's foolish that a brother and a sister should kiss and hug. So if your sister appreciates that, if she understands that, so don't kiss her. If she doesn't understand that, she's going to think, he went to the yeshiva and I said, became a meshugana, he became a fanatic. So if she won't understand that, so you kiss your sister when you come back, when you meet her at the airport or whatever. Strictly speaking, that's not called with a brother and a sister, a mother and a child, or let's say a great aunt. I remember I used to have my mother's aunts would come in from out of town. They were my grandmother's age, my grandmother's sisters. So there's no erotic pleasure from kissing a great aunt. So if you can avoid it, you avoid it. I couldn't avoid it. They came, they wanted to give me a hug and a kiss. Okay, so I kissed them back. That's not derech hibah. The cup that you use, if you're going to use a paper cup, so there's no shine on the cup, if you're going to use a cup that they reuse, then it's a question. It could be that they washed it in the washing machine together, the dishwasher together with trefa food and trefa dishes. The machine that cooks the coffee also, sometimes they wash that thing in a dishwasher. If it's a separate unit that you can't wash it in a dishwasher, there's no shaila on the pot that cooked the coffee. There's no shaila on the cup. It's a paper cup that's disposable. So then there's nothing to be treif about the coffee. Some of the coffees are treif. Some of the flavored coffees are treif. Some of the flavors that they mix into the coffees are treif. But if it's plain old coffee, then coffee is kosher. Just plain old coffee is kosher. Years ago, there was an issue. The coffees, years ago, during the Second World War, they didn't have enough coffee to supply the whole United States. So they used to fool the public. They used to mix in flour into the coffee. So you didn't get your full amount of coffee. So a lot of the coffee was chametzdik, because if you mix the coffee with water, burning hot water, so you had a lot of flour, and the flour would turn into chametz. So that's when they started a whole tumult. Coffee has to have a hashgach, has to be kosher lepesa. But that was during the Second World War, that's what they did. Maybe the Korean War, I don't think so. I think it was just during the Second World War that they did that shtick. Now, I don't think they do that anymore. I don't think they mix in any flour into the coffee.
Are there certain stones
that you should watch out for? I never drink coffee, so I wouldn't even... I never paid attention to the whole issue. It's not right for a woman to wear a sheitel that's more attractive than her own hair. But the alternative is going to be, what are you going to tell? To wear an ugly sheitel, to wear a babushka? So she's not going to cover her hair at all. I once was visiting Rabbi Schwab. Rabbi Schwab was the rabbi in Rabbi Breuer's shul. When Rabbi Breuer was an old man, he needed an assistant rabbi to help him, and then to take over after he passed away. So Rabbi Schwab was a student of Rabbi Breuer in Frankfurt, in Germany. So he came, he was the assistant to Rabbi Breuer. So remember, I used to visit Rabbi Schwab every year, because I was the rabbi at the branch of Breuer's. Breuer's had a branch in Paramus, New Jersey, so I was a rabbi there. So I had to visit Rabbi Schwab to discuss issues that came up in the shul. So I remember on one occasion he asks me, do I know who so-and-so is? So-and-so was a bacher who is learning in the Lubavitcher Yeshiva in Montreal. And he had put out a book, Hadras Pnei Zokein, encouraging everybody not to shave. But he's a Lubavitcher, so Lubavitcher hold that you're not allowed to shave. So he put out a whole sefer. And then he was about to put out another sefer that is prohibited for women to wear a sheitel. They have to dafka wear a tichel or a hat. They can't. You're not allowed to wear any sheitel, period. Not allowed to wear any sheitel. So Rabbi Schwab was asking me, do I know who this guy is? So I said, yeah, he's a single boy learning. And so before I finished the sentence, says, you don't do any single. Which Meshuggah girl is going to want to marry him? He says, you're not allowed to wear a sheitel? He said, when you're in the rabbinate, you have to learn to live with certain kulas. You can't be machmer and everything. So he says, sheitel is one of the kulas. We're not happy about the whole kula of a sheitel. Chacham Abadi says you're not allowed to wear a shekel. You have to dafke cover your hair with a hat or with a cloth or something. So he's opposed to shekel. Many gedolim were opposed to shekel. So Rabbi Schwab said you have to learn to live with the kula of a shekel, because if you'll be machmer and insist that the women have to wear a hat to cover their hair with a tichel, the end is going to be they're not going to cover their hair. So in order to encourage them to cover their hairs, you have to rely on the kula of the shekel. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's wife wanted to make a shekel from her own hair. So he permitted her, and he wrote a whole tshuva about it. We even allow the woman to detach her own hair to make a shekel from her own hair. The shekel wasn't so beautiful, but that's what she wanted. In her mind, that was gewaldig. She thought that her shekel from her own hair was better than any other shmata she would buy. So Moshe knew his wife. So he felt that you got to be mekel. It's a machlokes. So he felt it's kedai to be mekel there. What are the issues? A lot of the secular music is very coarse. A lot of it, the lyrics are very disgusting. But even without any lyrics, I remember there was a boy who had learned in the yeshiva, and then he went into business, and he was doing very nicely. So on Chalamot Pesach, Chalamot Sukkot, he always used to come over to my home and learn 2 days, 3 days in a row. I was learning anyway with whoever wanted to come over. So he used to come over. Now he doesn't come over anymore. Now he travels to Eretz Yisrael. Now he does so well in business. Every Yontif he goes to Eretz Yisrael. But years ago he used to come and learn with me. So then he felt out of Hakaras HaTov. He wanted to give me something back in exchange. So in business you can always buy, they have deals. You can buy tickets to operas. You know, I wouldn't be interested in going to an opera, so he bought me tickets to go to a not opera, what do you call it when they play music?
A concert
at Carnegie Hall, I think it was, on Leil Hashanah Rabbah. Leil Hashanah Rabbah. Two tickets for me and my wife. So I couldn't say no thank you, so I took the tickets and I was afraid he was going to ask me how did I like it. So I went Leil Hashanah Rabbah. I did not enjoy it at all. I thought it was awful. And they were playing music from some German composer. And I felt as if I heard the Nazi troops marching. This was a German before the Nazis, way before. He died before the Second World War. The Medrash has an expression that every artist and every composer puts his whole soul into the work that he does. A composer who composes music, or an artist who paints a picture, or a person who writes a novel, anything like that. So the artist puts his whole soul into it. So if it's a goyish soul, he put his goyish soul into the music, so the goyish soul, the music represents the goyish soul. So I felt as if, maybe other people didn't have that feeling, I felt as if I heard the Nazis marching while he was playing the music. I think that goyish music is going to have an expression of the goyish soul. Sometimes there's beautiful goyish music, okay? There's some non-Jews that have beautiful souls, but not all of them. There's some Jews who don't have such a pure soul either. I think music has a tremendous effect on a person's soul, on the neshama, and you have to be careful what effect it's going to have on you.
With the creation of the state of Israel and the soon-to-be reality of the majority of world Jewry living there in Israel, the question is, what are the halachic criteria that need to be met for Gedolei Israel to begin declaring that it's time to reinstitute the Sanhedrin, rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, etc., and practically, what will the process look like?
To reinstitute the Sanhedrin, to build the Beis HaMikdash, you have to have a Sanhedrin. Okay. To have a Sanhedrin, you have to have people who have smicha. We don't have any smicha ready for many years. The smicha that we have is only imitation smicha. Smicha, that's what the Ramon Shulchan Aruch quotes that from the Abar Benel. You don't really need the Abar Benel. It's in the Gemara like that. Everybody knows that. Smicha can only be conferred in Eretz Yisrael by someone who already had smicha, who was given his smicha in Eretz Yisrael. So the shalshelas hamasara of the smicha was broken already over 1500 years ago, a long time ago. In the days of the Amoraim, the smicha already, in the days of Eretz Yisrael, the smicha already ended. In Bavel, they never had any smicha. Only those who went to Eretz Yisrael would get smicha. It's already many years there's no smicha. So the Rambam writes in three places that he thinks a possibility, maybe there's a way to renew the smicha. For the Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael gathered together and they decide to confer smicha on individual Talmid HaChacham, and maybe that's a valid form of smicha. But then he says, "Itzarch lehisyashu bedov." You have to think about it. So what is it? We don't know. We don't know. The Rambam was bothered exactly with the question that you're asking. The Gemara has a tradition that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come the day before the coming of Mashiach to announce who Mashiach is. That's how the Gemara interprets the pasuk in Malachi. Is the day of Bias HaMashiach. So where is Eliyahu HaNavi going to appear? The Gemara says Eliyahu HaNavi will appear to the Bezna HaGadol. So if there's no smicha, there won't be any Bezna HaGadol. So where's Eliyahu HaNavi going to appear? So the Rambam says it must be that there's a way to restore the smicha without requiring ish mit b'ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's in the 1500s, in the days of Rabbi Yosef Karo. They had this interest. They wanted to prepare the way for the coming of Mashiach. That's why the Mekubalim moved to Tzfat, moved to the Galil. There were two reasons. One reason, because the water in Yerushalayim was very polluted, and the water in Tzfat was healthier. That's Alderach HaPshat. And then the other reason why they moved to the Galil was because the Gemara tells us that just like at the time of Churban Bayis Rishon, the Shechina left the Kodesh HaKadoshim in 10 different stages. As a Goli is Golso Shechina, so too at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, as a Goli is Golso Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin went at the Golos in 10 stages. So Sanhedrin used to meet in the Lishkas HaGozis in the Beis HaMikdash, then they went to the Chanus, then they went to Yerushalayim, then they went to Yavne, then they went to Usha, Shvaram, Tzipori, Teveria, and they kept on floating around, then they conked out there somewhere in the Galil. And the Rambam quotes the Gemara Rosh Hashanah has a tradition that wherever they met last, that's where they're going to reconvene Lasi Lavak, and the Sanhedrin will reconvene. So that's why they thought the Sanhedrin will be, in the 1500s, they assumed the Sanhedrin will be reconvening somewhere in the Galil, but you can't reconvene a Sanhedrin unless someone has smicha. So they decided they're going to start to do the Chiddush HaSmicha based on the Rambam. So they attempted it. They gathered together all the Rabbanim from Tzfat. They didn't invite all the Rabbanim from all of Eretz Yisrael. They only invited all the Rabbanim from Tzfat. And they gave, and Rabbi Mari Beirav, who was the Rebbe of the Beis Yosef, so he conferred smicha to Rabbi Yosef Karo, I think another two people. Then a couple of years later, 5 years later, they conferred smicha, I think, to the Alshech, if I'm not mistaken, and to another person. But then the whole thing died out. Nothing came out of it. The whole Chiddush HaSmicha, nothing came out of it. In recent years, a group of Rabbanim gathered together in Tveri, I think, also in the Galil, with Rabbi Steinsaltz, a group of people. And they said, Steinsaltz said, if other people want to come, I'll resign. Let other people come. So they gathered together, and they were they're reconvening. 71 Rabbanim reconvening, try to act as if they were Sanhedrin, and then they got some kind of a smicha. They got the big Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael to confer smicha somehow. Got smicha somehow. Didn't get smicha. We're not sure exactly how it's going to be. If Eliyahu HaNavi comes back, if Eliyahu HaNavi will appear. So he had smicha, so he'll be able. You don't need, the Rambam says, you don't need a bezna of three has to confer smicha. So you don't, the Rambam writes, you don't require all three conferring smicha to have smicha. One of them has to have smicha, the other two can be a plain balabatim. So if Eliyahu HaNavi will come and he had smicha, so he'll be able to confer smicha. We don't know what it's going to be like. Okay, we hope we'll live so long till we'll see the day, and we'll all I'll be able to tell you what it's like. We'll all be there together to see what it's like. When all the Jews, when Rov, the Gemara says, when you have Rov Yisrael living in Eretz Yisrael, there's a pasuk that's written on the Liberty Bell, across from Dror Baritz L'chol Yashvehu, the pasuk in Parshas Behar. And thou shalt proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all its inhabitants. I was brought up in Philadelphia. We used to walk on Shabbos into the Liberty, to see the Liberty Bell, to Independence Hall. That was one of the sights to see there. So the Liberty Bell was commissioned, it was paid for by the Jewish community of Pennsylvania. And it was made in Europe and it was sent to America. And they liked that pasuk, liberty. Proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. And then it was adopted by the 13 colonies and representing freedom in America. So that pasuk, across from Dror Baritz L'chol Yashvehu, the Gemara in the end of Erechin says, L'chol Yashvehu b'zman she'kol Yashvehu aleha. That Yovel only applies, Yovel is only to be observed if you have the majority of the world Jewish population living in Eretz Yisrael. That's the Posh Pshat in the Gemara. Need kol Yashvehu aleha. So that's why the Gemara has, the Gemara in the Sifra, the beginning of Bahar, has a machloikis hatanoim. Does it make sense to observe Shemitah min HaTorah every 70th year of Shemitah? only if you know it's going to lead up to a yovel. If after the 49th year, the next year is going to be a yovel, or do you say no? You have to observe Shemitah, even if it's not going to lead up to a yovel. So that's the question, whether Bizman Azeh, we don't have Kol Yashveh Aleha, whether the Shemitah is the Raisa the Rabbanim. The Rov HaPoskim always held that Shemitah Bizman Azeh is only the Rabbanim. Because that's how we assume in the Gemara, the first Daf Amid Katan, that Shemitah is only the Raisa if it can lead up to yovel. So some write in the newspapers, in the non-learned newspapers, they write that soon we're going to have the majority of the world Jewish population will be living in Eretz Yisrael, we're going to have Kol Yashveh Aleha, so then Shemitah will become the rice, and then Hol Het HaMechir won't apply anymore, because it'll be able to lead up to Yovel. So this is not what it says in the Gemara. When you look in the Gemara says Kol Yashveh Aleha doesn't only mean the majority of the world Jewish population living in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says, and everybody knows what Shevet they belong to, and all the Shvatim are living in their section. Shevet Yisachar is living in Eretz Yisachar. Shevet Zvulun is living in Shevet Zvulun. That we don't know who belongs to what Shevet. The Kohanim and the Levim, we know that they're from Shevet Levi. The other Shvatim, hardly anybody knows. Those who claim to be descendants from the Malchus Beis David, okay, there are such people. So they're from Shevet Yehuda, and everybody else doesn't know. The Bnei Yisachar was Achsidish Rebbe. So his Rebbe told him he's from Shevet Yisachar. So that's why he called the Sefer Bnei Yisachar. But most people don't know what Shevet they belong to. So the Gemara says, we're not yet holding by that. That we're very far from Kol Yashveh Aleha. Maybe Eliyahu Navi, the Mishnah says, Eliyahu Navi is going to come not to say, La letame v'la letar, la lesa v'la lahate, is not going to pass in any shaylas. The Rabbanim will work on the shaylas. Eliyahu Navi will identify what Shevet people belong to. They'll identify who's Jewish. They never understood the mission. What do you mean who's Jewish? We don't know who's Jewish. So now you live in Eretz Yisrael, you don't know who's Jewish. You have such a mixture of people came from Russia, and the government, the Israeli government says more than half of the people who came from Russia are not Jewish. And there's such a confusion, so much intermarriage, we don't know what's going on over here. So the Mishnah tells us, a day is going to come, Eliyahu Navi is going to come, he'll have to tell us who's Jewish and who belongs to which Shevet, and who's a Kohen, who's a Levi, who's a Israel, and so on. So when that could be, Eliyahu Navi will come today, and so we'll have Kol Yashveh Aleha, but 50-50 chance. But just because so many Jews are moving to Eretz Yisrael, that's not yet Kol Yashveh Aleha. We hope it's going to come, terrifying. Okay. It's hard to imagine what it's going to be like.
When we have gedolim that give stock on something, how does that affect us if we have rabbanim in our communities who might say differently?
Yeah, somebody asked me, are you allowed to read the book and making him a gadol because so many gedolim asked reading the book? So I asked the boy, did you ever ask any shaylas to these rabbanim? He says no. So I said, so they're not your rabbanim. What is it your business? Did your rabbanim say it's an isit? So many, each group has their own rabbanim. Everybody should follow their own rabbanim. If you would have someone, mamish, he's recognized as the gadol hador, so then everyone's mukhif to listen to the gadol hador. Unfortunately, we don't have such an individual, a group of individuals who are recognized by everybody that they're the gadol hador. In the days of Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says, in the end of Brachas, Rabbi Akiva is lahinich kamoise beretz Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva was known as the Gadol Ador. Years ago, there used to be generations during the lifetime of the Vilna Gaon. They know the Vilna Gaon was the greatest Gadol. But it's a long time since that. We don't have any one person or any group of people who are recognized as the Gadol Ador that their opinion should be accepted by everybody. So each group follows their own Rabbanim.
With regards to tittus, should you have them in, tucked in, or have them out? And what's the idea of wrapping them around the belt?
The simple reading of the Chafetz of the Mishnah Brura is that the Magen Avraham says the garment should be covered, should be below your shirt, and the chuti atzitzis should be exposed. This is based on Midrashim. One Medrash says the chuti should be hidden. The tzitzit should be hidden once the Medrash says the tzitzit should be exposed. So the Magen Avraham quotes from the Arizal this compromise. The baggage should be under the shirt and the chutim should be exposed. And this is the simple reading of the Mishnah Berurah that the chuti atzitzit should be exposed. Chacham Avadya writes in his Svarim that God should forgive Achenu Ashkenazim who violate this serious issa that they have the tzitzis exposed. They're not supposed to do that. Based on Kabbalah source, you're not supposed to have the tzitzis exposed. So I guess God is forgiving us. Chacham Avad, you said he should forgive us. He's going to forgive us. Okay. There used to be a prominent Talmud Chacham in Brooklyn, then he moved there. It's Yisrael, Rabbi Gussman. Rabbi Saul Gussman. It was a big Talmud Chacham at a very young age. He was appointed a dayan in Vilna with Reb Chaim Moshe on Reb Chaim Moshe's bed. I think he was only 19 years old. So on one occasion, he told the students in New York, on one occasion, Chavetz Chaim came to Vilna to speak to Reb Chaim Moshe about some political issue, and he noticed that the Chavetz Chaim's tzitzis were not exposed. So he asked them, he was very shocked, so he asked them, but in the Mishnah Berurah it says you're supposed to have the tzitzis, the chutei tzitzis exposed. So he said, I beg your pardon, it doesn't say that, Mishnah Berurah. And he said, it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean what you thought that it says. He meant, he didn't write the Mishnah Berurah. The Chavetz Chaim was the general editor of the project. He had each part of the Mishnah Berurah was written by someone else, but he was the general advisor. So he still said, that's not what it says in the Mishnah Berurah. He just said, you shouldn't be embarrassed to wear the tzitzis out. So on. But he said he never meant, as the editor of the Mishnah Berurah, he never meant that the tzitzis should be exposed. In many yeshivas in Europe, the Litvish Talmidim did not wear the tzitzis exposed. They didn't wear the tzitzis exposed. Now it's a common practice because that's a simple reading of the Mishnah Berurah. That's what the Magen Avraham says, that the tzitzis are supposed to be exposed. On the belt, yeah, on the belt means that that used to be in Chaim Berlin years ago. And Yeshiva and Wayu, they didn't wear the tzitzis out. And then Chaim Berlin used to wear the tzitzis out, but not hanging out. They used to just roll on the belts. Everyone, they didn't wear jackets. They were walking around in their shirt sleeves, and we would see the tzitzis on people. Risa Moshe, you're supposed to be able to see the tzitzis. There is a medrash that Vayikach Shem Bo Yefes Es Asim Bo Vayisimu Al Shechem Shnehem, when Noach became drunk, so Chom was the miserable son, and he was making fun of the father that he's drunk and he's undressed. He took off all his clothes. He was shikah. He didn't know what he was doing. So Shem Bo Yefes were the good sons. So the pasuk says in the singular Vayikach, instead of saying Vayikchu Shem Bo Yefes, says Vayikach Shem Bo Yefes. What does it mean? So the Medrash says it was really Shem's idea, but Yefes went along, he saw that it's a nice thing to do. So Rav Soloveitchik, I remember, once gave a whole Yahrzeit Drasha. He used to give on Gimel Shvat, he had Yahrzeit for his father. So he would give a long shiur for 4 hours, at least 4 hours long. The first day of the shiur would be for 2 hours and halacha. He would start off with a whole bunch of kashas, and then he would explain the whole Gemara, and he would answer all the kashas. That was a fantastic shiur for 2 hours. That kept everybody's interest. He was a very good speaker. And then he would speak 2 hours a long drasha, usually on a related topic that was related to the shiur. So one year he gave a shiur on tzitzis, and he spoke in the Chelek HaGadah, he spoke about Shem Vayefes, that Yafta Lekim Layefes, there's ethics and there's etiquette. So etiquette depends on whatever is minig hamdina, whatever is acceptable. So it says, Vayikach Shem Vayefes, Shem did what was ethically required. He didn't wait to see what the other people are going to do. He knew that that's not proper. The father is naked, the father is drunk, so we have to go walking backwards and cover over the father. Yefes saw that Shem is doing a nice thing, so he jumped on the bandwagon, so he went along. That's why he says in the singular, Vayikach Shem by Yefes. So that's why, because Yefes was makbed on etiquette, so that's why the pasuk says, Yafta lekim leYefes, v'yishkim yor leShem, the beauty of Yefes. Yefes goes along with whatever is beauty, whatever beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. And shame does the right thing. You have to do the right thing even if people don't see. So the Midrashim say that Bnei Yisrael was zeicher to tzitzis because we are descendants of shame. And then there's another Medrash that says Bnei Yisrael was zeicher to tzitzis in the schar that Avraham Avinu said, Michut v'atzrech nal. He's not going to take anything. Emekach mikol shalach from Melech Sedom. So the Mefarshim and Rashi, it's a contradiction between the two Midrashim. Rizecha Tetzitz is because of Shem, or Rizecha Tetzitz is because of Avram. So they give the Teretz, the Rizecha to the Beged of Tetzitz because Veikach Shem Be'efes is similar. Rizecha to the Chutim of Tetzitz because Avram Avinu said, Michut Ratzrech Nal. So because we Rizecha to the Beged of Tetzitz, because of shame. The shame did the right thing, even if no one's watching. So that's why the Magen Avraham quotes the Arizal, the beged should be under your shirt. No one should see that you're wearing the beged of tzitzis. The beged is supposed to be, when no one's watching, you wear the beged of tzitzis. Like shame did the right thing, even though no one was watching. And the chutim of tzitzis, that's a different thing with Zaycha, because Avraham Avinu said, mechut v'atzrechna. So that should be exposed, because there is some also. That's the Magen Avraham quotes from Arizal. The beged should be covered up. Not like those who wear the beged on top of their jacket, or they take off the jacket and the beged is exposed. So the Arizal says the beged should be covered up, and the chutim should be exposed. But that was part of Rabbi Soloveitchik's drasha.
Additionally, is one obligated to wear tzitzis at night?
The Gemara says that a ksus laila is potter. Risa Moshe prat the ksus laila. So that's a famous machlekes, the Rambam against Tosfos in the Rosh. The Rambam understands that it's Yom versus Laila. That by Laila, the mitzvah of tzitzis doesn't apply, only by Yom. But Tosfos says no, that pajamas are potter. Ksus laila is potter. If you have a beged Yom by Laila, you would be chayv. And if you wear pajamas in the daytime, you would be potter. A beged Yom is chayv, and a beged Laila is potter. So if you wear an Arba Kamfas Balayla, so that would be a machlekes. According to Tosis, you would say a brach. That's a guy takes a shower, and then he puts on, takes a shower at night, then he wants to get dressed again, then he puts on tzitzis. So should he say a brach or not? So according to Tosis, you should say a brach. That's a ksus yom. According to the Rambam, the mitzvah doesn't apply Balayla. Because in a machlekes, so that's why in the Shulchan Aruch, the Taz recommends you should never put on tzitzis Balayla. And when the Chazan says slichas, so he always, the meaning is, he put on a talis when the chazan says shlichas, because the Gemara says Hakadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu vayava Hashem al panav vayikar malam shenasakav Hakadosh Baruch Hu kashliach tzibur. The Rabbeinu Shlom dressed up in the vision that Moshe Rabbeinu had, the nevuah that he had. He visualized as if the Rabbeinu Shlom dressed up with a talis. The Rabbeinu Shlom recited the Yud Gimel Minas Hashem Hashem Karach Mechanon, and he told Moshe Rabbeinu, "Cause man shabana choytim yasa lefani kisei drazeh bani moichalam. Let the Jewish people recite Yud Gimel Minas Arachmin, and I will forgive them." So the Rebbeinu Shlom put on a talis, so we, the Chazan, puts on the talis in order to say slichas at night. So when you put on the talis at night, so it's going to be a machlokes when they say a brocha or not. So the Taz says, put on someone else's talis. So for sure you're not chayiv in tzitzis. If you borrow a talis from someone else, you're not chayiv in tzitzis until after 30 days. If you just borrow a talis one day, you're not mechayiv to put on tzitzis. So that's the Taz is chumer, that you should never put on an arba kamfas balaylo, because it's going to be a Safik Brocha. So sometimes, let's say on Chalamoid, people put on tefillin, if many people put on tefillin, they don't say a Brocha, because that's a machlekes, whether you mechuyev in tefillin or not. So mi Safik, you put on tefillin, and Safik Brocha is locha, you don't say a Brocha. That's because machlekes, somehow you mechuyev to put on tefillin, so you have no choice, you have to do the mitzvah without a Brocha. But here, you're not mechuyev to wear the whole Arba Kamfas in the first place. The whole thing is a Midas Chasidus. If you wear an Arba Kamfas, then you mechuyev in tzitzis. If you don't wear an Arba Kamfas, you're not mechuyev to have tzitzis. So the Taz recommends, so don't do the whole Midas Chasidus at night. Don't put on the Arba Kamfas at night.
Can Rabbi please define the term Tinok Shenishpa? And based on Rabbi's definition, how does that apply nowadays? How is a Tinok Shenishpa judged? And is it possible that the term Tinok Shenishpa could apply to certain communities today that consider themselves observant?
Tinok Shenishpa, the Gemara talks about a person who violates an Avera B'Shoigeg. The Torah says when a person does an Avera B'Shoigeg, he has to bring a Korban Chatos. So the Gemara explains it's not any Avera B'Shoigeg. If I cheat in business, b'shogeg, it's not b'shogeg, it's b'mezen. But let's say, if I say lashon hara, it's also b'mezen, it's not b'shogeg. If you do some aver b'shogeg, any aver b'shogeg, you don't have to bring a korban chatas. Only if you do an aver b'shogeg, which, if you want to violate the aver b'mezen, there would have been a punishment of kares, so then if you violate a b'shogeg, then you have to bring a korban chatas. So the Gemara talks about the fellow who violated all the 39 melachos on Shabbos. He knows that Shabbos exists, but he doesn't know anything about Shabbos. He violated all the 39 melachos. He has to bring 39 chatos. So what did he know about Shabbos? So let's say a Jewish person violates Avodah Zarah. So he has to bring a korban chatos b'shogeg. So what did he know about the Jewish religion? So the Gemara says, "Aye, a tinek shenishba lebein humas. He was held in captivity. He was brought up in a Goyish neighborhood. He never heard anything about Judaism. He just knows he's Jewish. He doesn't know too much about the Jewish religion. So in the Gemara, it's talking about a rare instance where there's a person who's Jewish who didn't know too much about Judaism. And later, Poskim have this expression that even if a person knows about Shabbos and he knows about Kashrus and he knows about the Dinim, but he was brought up by parents who didn't give him the proper education. He was brainwashed by his parents. He was brought up in a community where this is acceptable, that you don't have to observe Shabbos, you don't have to observe Kashrus, you don't have to observe Pesach and so on. So he violated all the laws of the Torah. So in a certain sense, we should consider, it's a little bit bemazed. He knows that all over the world, the Jews, he knows that the other Jews are observing the Dinim. But he thinks it's Amidas Hasidus. Like we look at the Hasidim, they wear a Shtreimon, they wear a Bekesha, and they wear white socks. We don't do the same thing. That's their Menhagim. What has God to do to us? So they think Kashrus and Shabbos and Taras HaMishpacha, that's their Menhagim. What has God to do with us? We're not Muchiv to do their Menhagim. Just like we look at the Hasidim, we say these are all Menhagim, we don't have to observe it. So they look at the religious Jews, they say everything is all Menhagim. They don't have to observe this either. And even though the observant Jews say that this is all Menashe Mayim, so, but their parents never told them that. So we assume that in a certain sense, these people are really violating all the Averis B'Shoigi. So there is a punishment that if a person is in violation of all the laws of the Torah, says a mumer le'rov din ha'Torah, so we treat him like a nochri. We have rare cases if a person is a mumer to one din, a person violates Avodah Zarah, so that is dina kenochri with respect to certain dinim. A person is mechal Shabbos b'farhesia. Farhesia means that not only b'mezid, farhesia means he's breaking the discipline in the community. So he only violates the one aver of chilul Shabbos b'farhesia, dina kenochri. Then you have a din, one is a mumer l'rov din ha'Torah, one who violates the majority, 51% of the dinim that he's aware of. If he violates, also dina kenochri. So these dinim, so traditionally based on Rambams, we assume if he was brought up by parents who never gave him a proper education, and he thinks that everything has just been hugging, he doesn't really appreciate that this is Torah Min HaShamayim, that these are mitzvahs that are binding. So in a certain sense, everything is b'shoigig. So for many generations, people were mekel. After Rabbi Yashar passed away, so they published in the newspapers that he didn't agree with Rav Kook. Rav Kook, as if Rav Kook discovered America. Rav Kook said like all the posts, Rav Kook said like the Chazon Ish, that all these people are teenage in Yishmael. So Rabbi Yashiv thought that it's already Higia Hazman. There's so much fighting in Eretz between the religious and the Chilonim, and they already know where their religious position is. They already know that we say this is Torah Min HaShamayim, and these are your mechuyev to observe these dinim. And they don't care to observe it. So how long can you say that there's still teenage in Yishmael? So Rabbi Yashiv thought that it's already Higia Hazman to throw out this idea. There's no more teenage in Yishmael. Okay, still been again to Mechal Shabbos Befehesia, that he didn't, I don't think Rabbi Yashiv disagreed about that. Mechal Shabbos Befehesia has to be something more than b'mezid. Befehesia means he's breaking the discipline in the community. All the people are Shomer Shabbos, and he's not embarrassed. He's Mechal Shabbos, doesn't care. So that, you can't say that the Mechal Shabbos are Befehesia, because unfortunately, majority of the Jews all over in Eretz Yisrael in America, majority of the Jews are not Shomer Shabbos. The minority of Shomer Shabbos, you can't say that that's Befehesia. But as far as everything else is concerned, to be Malamit Zchus and to say that everybody is in a certain sense B'shege, because Tinik Shenishba, they were given improper education by their parents, so Rabbi Yashiv thought that it's ready, Higi Azman, that the jig is up. He thought that it doesn't apply anymore. No.
One of the problems with showering on Shabbos,
if you take a cold shower, there's a machlokes hatanaim. In the days of the Tanaim, they didn't have private. Each private home didn't have a shower and a bath. They had a public bathhouse. So these that balonim, the bathhouse attendant, is known as the balon. Bathhouse attendants were not the most learned. They were not the most religious people. So some of them used to be Mechal Shabbos. The Jews wanted to take a hot bath or a hot shower on Shabbos afternoon, so they wouldn't leave on the fire from Erev Shabbos. It would use up a lot of fuel. It would burn up a lot of logs. So they used to make the fire on Shabbos and make believe that the water was heated on Erev Shabbos, and they just maintained the heat the whole Shabbos long. And that would be Mechal Shabbos to heat up the water. So the Tanaim said, you're not allowed to bathe in hot water on Shabbos because of the Gzeres HaBalonim, because we're afraid that they're going to be Mechal Shabbos. So one Tana was of the opinion, there was a big machlekes hatanaim in the third perek of Masechus Shabbos, perikira, how far do you go with this gzera de rabban? So there was an opinion in the days of the Tanaim that the prohibition even applied to take a cold shower. So we don't paskin like that, but that was the minig though. The Mordechai quotes that was the minig from the days of the Bali HaTosin, not even to take a cold shower on Shabbos. In the last 150 years that it became much more common to take, so years ago they would take a bath once a year, twice a year, Lamahadran, three times a year, something like that. Like in the days of George Washington, they didn't take a bath so often. When they would smell, so they would throw perfume on the body. They would say again, they would throw more perfume on the body. They wouldn't bathe so often. A lot of dinim and Shulchan Aruch are different bizman hazeh, because the whole practice of bathing changed completely. In recent years that people bathe much more often, I think in high school we learned when Whitney invented the cotton gin, they started making cotton underwear, that's when they started bathing much more often. And before they had cotton underwear, so then they hardly ever bathed. Once or twice a year they would bathe, take a shower, take a bath. So in recent years, after Whitney invented the cotton gin, so people bathe much more often. So the Gdolim in Europe said that minig, not to take a cold shower on Shabbos, we make a lot of that you're allowed to take a cold shower on Shabbos and Yom Tov. We no longer have that chumrah because people find it very annoying if you're all perspired and you really need a shower. We bathe so much more often, so we no longer observe that. Meaning we live under different circumstances. The shaila is though, if it's a person can't take the cold water, so it's going to turn on a little hot water. So usually turning on the hot water involves an issue that when you turn on the hot water, you're causing cold water to get cooked. Sometimes the different systems in different buildings. So sometimes when you turn on the hot water, the cold water gets cooked right now, and you're using that cold water that was just cooked now, that just became hot water. And a lot of times you have a boiler full of hot water, and when it reaches a certain point, so then when it reaches a certain low point, then cold water goes in and starts cooking up. And sometimes as you're using the hot water from the boiler, so cold water goes in to replace the hot water that disappears, different kinds of systems. But outside of Shabbos Shabbahem, there's always going to be an issue of cooking water on Shabbos. Cooking water on Shabbos is not only prohibited if you want to drink the water, even if you just want to bathe with the water, it's also prohibited to cook cold water on Shabbos. Cooking the water on Yom Tov, that's a big discussion that the Poskim have. Is it prohibited to take a hot shower? Is it prohibited to cook water on Yom Tov to bathe or not? So in the days of the Mishnah, it says you're not allowed. The Mishnah in Beitzah says that there's a machlekes bisham and misilo, if you're allowed to heat up cold water for the purpose of washing panav yodav araglov, to wash your hands and your feet on Yom Tov. So we pass on like misilo that it is permissible. That's also called eichal nefesh or mitoch, one or the other. It's permissible to heat up cold water on Yom Tov to wash panav yodav araglov. For the Mishnah would appear, but to heat up cold water to take a full shower, a full bath, it would appear from the Mishnah that you're not allowed to do. So that's the question, why not? If you're allowed to heat up water to wash panav yodav araglov, why shouldn't it be permissible on Yom Tov to heat up water to take a full bath or a full shower? So the Rishonim gave different explanations. So Tosfos claims that wash kol haguf in hot water is a dovah she'eino shaveh l'chol nefesh. Only the mefunakim do that. Normal people don't bathe. Normal people just wash panav yodav araglov in hot water. And then normal people don't have to bathe. So that's why you're not allowed to. Adov v'shein eshav v'l'chal nefesh, in the days of the Gemara, they had a practice after they would have a big meal, and they would bench, so they would burn incense, and then inhale the fragrant aroma, and they would enjoy that. So the Gemara says, on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to burn mugmer, you're not allowed to burn these incense, in order to smell it, because it's not l'briyas aguf, it's only the tainik bi'alma. And that's Dovah Shein Eshav L'chol Nefesh. So Tosfos thinks Pshat in the Mishnah is that to heat up water in order to take a bath or a shower, Kol Haguf, that's a Dovah Shein Eshav L'chol Nefesh, only Mufunakim did that. So according to Tosfos' opinion, Mizman Hazeh, everybody takes a shower and a bath. So according to Tosfos, it will be permissible on Yom Tov to heat up water to take a shower or a bath. The Ramban disagrees with Tosfos. He says that doesn't make sense and was never correct in the days of the Tanaim. Everybody took a shower and a bath. What are you telling me? Dov v'shein eshav l'chol nefesh? That normal people don't bathe and don't take a shower? That's ridiculous. He doesn't think it's correct. They live in different countries, so they had different perspectives on life. The Balatos lived in France. Apparently that was the practice, that hardly anybody bathed the Kol HaGuf, like in America, the early years in America, George Washington and so on. So the Ramban thinks that that was never the pshat in the Mishnah, and he thinks that the reason why the Mishnah doesn't allow heating up water on Yom Tov to take a bath or a shower is because the Gzeres HaBalonim that was instituted on Shabbos carries over to Yom Tov, even though the reasoning doesn't apply. He's not Yom Tov, it should be mutter to heat up water to wash Kol HaGuf, but that's the Gzeres HaBalonim. So that's a question, how is one allowed, are you allowed to take a shower, a warm shower, to take a cold shower on Shabbos Yom Tov, we would allow. To take a hot shower on Shabbos, clearly not allowed, because you keep cooking up water. What about to take a hot shower on Yom Tov, would that be permitted? So according to Tosfos, it would be permitted. And the Mishnah Berurah recommends, one should be koshish for the Ramban, but then he negotiates, how could you find a heter? So the Mishnah Berurah says, if you take a cold shower and just turn on a little bit of hot water to take out the chill, so he quotes the Beis Meir, that for sure is mutter. That's not called rechitza bechamin. If you turn on so much warm water that the water is lukewarm, so that's already a machlokes, but that's included in Gzeres HaBalonim. Maybe the Gzeres is only instituted if you're bathing in hot water, burning hot water, that's Yad Soledes bo. Yad Soledes means I can't keep my hand there in the water for too long. But I can take a shower in Yad Soledes water. I'm not going to say, it's not scalding. Scalding water is called Yad Nichves. Yad Soledes means if I keep my hand too long, it'll hurt me. But it's possible to take a shower. I usually do take a shower in Yad Soledes water. It bounces off my body and it rolls down the drain. Okay? So that's a machlekes the Mishnah Berurah has. When they made the Gzeres HaBalonim, did it only apply to Yad Soledes water? Does it even apply to poshrim, to lukewarm water? So Mishnah Berurah recommends one should be machmir, just turn on the hot water to take out the chill. So that would be mutter on Yom Tov. On Shabbos, that's also asur because you're heating water. But on Shabbos, we would be making on a cold shower. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the minig from the Balei HaTosfos. The Mishnah Berurah was written a long time ago, the late 1800s, the early 1900s. So he quotes the issa that the minig is you don't take a cold shower on Shabbos. And other poskim say that around that time, around the year 1900 or so, that's when other gedolim said that we no longer observe that minig because we find it uncomfortable. So to wash kol haguf b'tzayin and do be mutter on Shabbos and Yom Tov.
If
you're dry, you have to be careful not to squeeze out your hair. Okay, but you can use a towel to dry off the rest of the body. That's not a problem. You have to be careful not to, if you're going to use shampoo, not to squeeze out of your hair. Okay. Got to be careful. The Gemara says, "Ein schita b'seir." There's no biblical prohibition to squeeze out the water that's in the hair. But mid the Rabbanon, we assume that it is prohibited. So machlokes, we assume mid the Rabbanon, you're not allowed to squeeze out the water in the hair. So you got to be careful about that. What do you say? Can you swim in a private pool on Shabbos? Yeah, strictly speaking, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to. Ain't shut in means you're not allowed to row a boat. Loshut, the Mishnah says that a father is mechuyav to teach his son, doesn't say he's mechuyav to teach his son to swim, it says mechuyav to teach his son how to row a boat. To swim is lischos, and loshut is to row a boat. So they made gzeira d'rabban, you're not allowed to row a boat, even if it's in a rishus hayochid. And included in the gzeira is that if it's a river where it's shaykh to talk about using a rowboat, so you're not even allowed to go swimming there. But if it's not a river where you would normally use a boat, if it's a swimming pool where you don't use any boats, then the Gemara says it's permissible to swim. You have to be careful not to squeeze out the trunks, not to squeeze out the towel, not to squeeze out the hair. The question is, what is Shabbos for? Shabbos is not for the purpose of swimming. Shabbos is Shabboson. There's an essay of Shabboson. There are 39 malachas. And even if you don't violate any of them, or you don't squeeze out your hair, and you don't do any malacha, you don't do a malacha derais, you don't do a derais derabanan. But Shabbos is supposed to be for davening and for learning, for elevating oneself in a ruchnias dika sense. What's a guy going to do swimming a whole day? If he's just schwitzing away, and he just can't take it anymore, he wants to go dip in a swimming pool, so strictly speaking, that's permissible. But to spend a significant amount of time swimming on Shabbos is not what Shabbos is for. So true, he won't be in violation of any of the prohibitions, but he won't be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Shabbos. There is a mitzvah of Shabbos, and in addition to being careful not to violate the malachas, there's a mitzvah to observe Shabbos properly, for its purpose.
How did Rebbe decide to become a rabbi? And how do you suggest that we go about deciding how to choose a career as well?
Everybody has to go into the field that they're cut out for. When I got married, I didn't know what I was going to do for a living. Now, people don't get married. They have to decide in advance what they're going to do for a living and how many children they're going to have and where they're going to live and everything. When I got married, I didn't know how I was going to make a living. I saw a nice religious girl and we got married, right? And then I figured out afterwards what I'm going to do for a living. So I originally thought I was going to go to law school. Because I enjoyed learning Gemara, and you have to make a living, so I figured that law is probably closest to Gemara. So I thought, from all the parnassus, I thought law school would be best for me. So someone told Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein about that. He was heading the kollel at that time in yeshiva. So he spoke to me, and he said he understands why I go to law school. Am I interested in becoming a lawyer? So I said, not really, but you have to do something for a living, and I thought that law is closest to Gemara. So he told me he doesn't think that's a smart idea. Because law school is very taxing, you have to do a lot of reading. If you're not really interested, you really shouldn't do that. So I said, so what should I do for a living? So he said, become a Rebbe in yeshiva. So I said, there are no openings. So he said, they're going to have to be openings ultimately. People are going to retire. Someone's going to have... At that time, he was the only American who was a Rebbe in yeshiva. So he said, ultimately, people are going to retire. So I stayed on in the kollel. And then what happened was, there was a Rebbe from Eretz Yisrael who was visiting. He was a visiting Rebbe in yeshiva for 1 year, Moshe Hershler. He passed away already now. He, at that time, he was from Yerushalayim. He was known. He published more, I think he published more Kisviyad of Yerushalayim than any other individual person. He put out the Rabbeinu Yonah and Baba Basra and the Ramban on different Masechtas. He put out a lot of Kisviyad. So he was a visiting Rebbe in yeshiva 1 year because he had married all some of his children and he owed Allah. He was greatly in debt. So he came to teach in yeshiva 1 year. So then at the end of the year, so that was the year of Mohammed Sheisha Tayamim. He was teaching in New York and his wife was heading at Beis Yankif in Yerushalayim. So his wife wasn't with him the whole year. And then she came for Pesach. And after Pesach, and they left all the children behind, and Eretz Yisrael, they had young children, they left all the children behind. And then was the war, the Mohammed Sheisha Tayamim. And you couldn't get through by telephone to Eretz Yisrael, because all the wires were taken. All the phones were taken. So it took them a couple of days till they found out all the children were alive. The people in America, during Mohammed Sheisha Tayamim, so the first day, the Israeli government didn't release any information at all about what was happening. And the Arabs, the first day they said, they bombed the oil refinery in Tel Aviv, all of Tel Aviv was destroyed. Then the next day they said they bombed the Israeli Air Force, and no Israeli Air Force. Then they killed, you heard, every Jew was dead already in Eretz Israel. And the American Congress was discussing whether they're going to intervene, whether they're going to get involved. It sounded as if Medina Sitzel was wiped off of the map already, because they weren't releasing any information. And the Arabs were complaining, were claiming that they won the war already, they won everything. And then there was a smashing success, and this Rabbi and Mrs. Hershler were in America then, and he couldn't get through to if their children are alive or dead. So after a couple of days, they got through on the phone. Everybody was alive and kicking, everything was going well, and the Jews won the war. It was fantastic. It was Mamish Lamaila Menatero. So this Rabbi Hershler said, never again, he's not going to come to America again. To have such a pachad, he won't know what he's doing with his children, so he said he's not coming back next year. So Dr. Belkin was the president of the yeshiva. He was sure that he was going to come back because he still owed a lot of money. He was still deeply in debt for his weddings, for his daughter's weddings. So he told the menahel of the yeshiva to set aside a class of 30 students for Rabbi Hershler. So it came the beginning of September, the beginning of the year, and he didn't show up. So Dr. Belkin asked me to substitute temporarily. I'm still substituting temporarily. That's what happened. I fell into this position. I never applied for any job. I never applied for any job in my life. I don't know what it means to apply for a job. I have a lot of jobs. I have a lot of jobs. Every time my wife had another baby, we have 9 children. Every time my wife had another baby, someone called me up, would I like to give a shiur, would I like to do this, would I like to work on this manuscript, would I like to... Say. Every time my wife had another baby, min hashamayim, I got another parnasa. So... It just turned out like that. I don't know. It's a very serious issue. What to do for a living and whom to marry and whom to vote for. We were talking over breakfast. These are all serious shailas. You have to consult with a big Talmud Chacham. The Gemara says HaKadosh Baruch Hu sheds 3 tears every day. And two of the three tiers are about the misplaced persons. There are people who belonged in learning who went into secular fields, and people who went into learning who belonged in secular fields. Not every rabbi belongs in the rabbinate or in chinuch. You must have, so many students, you must have had some rebbe at some time or another who turned you off from learning. There are a lot of people in chinuch and rabbanis that don't belong there. They belong in other fields. They don't know how to deal with people. So it's really important to determine what you're going to do for a living is a very serious issue. You should really discuss it with the rabbeim who know you well. You can't just ask Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Well, he doesn't know me. Well, I'm going to ask Rav Chaim Kanievsky. You have to ask someone who knows you very well and who knows what you cut out for. Very serious issue. Whom you should marry is also a very important issue. You should discuss also with Talmid HaChamim what type of a girl you should marry. What about Rav Soloveitchik?
Has been the most influential in shaping our generation.
He was very influential, yeah.
What about him? What feature or what help?
What about him?
What about
he had an obsession of giving over Torah. He had an obsession. He was always giving shiur. In New York, in the yeshiva, he only gave a shiur Tuesday and Wednesday. That's all. The later years, he gave Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But he used to give a shiur for Balabatim on Tuesday night in New York. People would come from out of town, businessmen would come from out of town. They would always see to it that they would be in New York on Tuesday night to hear the shiur. Then in Boston, he gave a lot of shiur. Then for the rabbinic alumni, he gave shiur. Then for the Mizrahi, he gave shiur. Whenever there was an opportunity, he felt that so much was destroyed in Europe during the war. They killed so many Talmid HaChachamim, and they destroyed all the yeshivas, and they burnt all the svarim. When I was a young boy, there weren't so many svarim available in America. When I was your age, they already were. But when I was a young boy, svarim were hard to come by. A lot was destroyed, Sir Rav Soloveitchik. He had traditions of so much in learning. His father poured so much into him. And his both grandfathers, he learned more by his mother's father than by his father's father, Ben Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Both grandfathers were big Talmid HaChacham, and his father was a big Talmid HaChacham. They poured so much learning into him, so he had this obsession after the war. He has to give over everything, all the time he's giving over everything to the students. And he felt that it's not enough. He said, Rabbi Hirsch in Frankfurt, Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch accomplished with his project of Torah Derech Eretz, that all the Balabatim should learn a little bit. He says he remembers the peak of what was accomplished by the Torah Derech Eretz Shita was, he said, there was a professor Mittwoch, who was a religious professor in the university in Berlin. That's where Rav Soloveitchik went to university. So everyone knew he would come in on Tisha B'Av when they had classes with sneakers, the Shtekshich. He would come in with sneakers because he's an Orthodox Jew. But he says, how learned was he? He knew how to look in a Gemara, he knew how to look in a Chumash and a Shulchan Aruch. But Rav Soloveitchik said, in the yeshiva, we succeed in having people, big Talmid HaChachamim, in physics and chemistry, whatever field they go into. But big Talmid HaChachamim know how to discuss the Ktzos HaChoshen and to argue with the Ktzos, whether he's right, whether he's wrong. They say higher levels of learning, not just the level of Balabatim. He insisted that everyone has to learn Torah on the highest level. So he was very successful in that in the yeshiva. He made learning much more popular in America. So years ago, learning used to be very esoteric. If you ever go to Lakewood is a tremendous big yeshiva, but the learning is on such a high level, if you go into a shiur there, you won't understand a word. They talk a different language. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, we can't keep learning so esoteric, only for a small group of people, and the Balabatim won't understand. He said, that's not right, that's not the way it's supposed to be. Just like in the New York Times, or in the Time magazine, and the magazines, whenever there's some new discovery in physics, or in chemistry, or in biology, so they write it up in layman's language, to try that Balabatim should understand it. A new discovery in whatever... what do you call it, in the stars, and the moon, and the sky, and all that kind of stuff. So whenever there's anything new, discovery of physics, anything, so they always write it up in layman's language. In the graduate schools where they teach these things, so they talk their they talk their terminology, they use their language, so if you go to the lectures, you won't understand a word. But in the newspapers, they write it up that the Hamayinam should understand. So he insisted, we have to give public shiurim, not to water down the learning, no. To elevate the level of the Balabatim, you have to teach Torah in such a way that Balabatim should be able to understand it. That was his big introduction. So now that he did it, and now all the yeshivas are doing in America now, everybody's doing it, that learning should not be so secretive, so esoteric, only for the select few, it should be for the public, everybody. So now you have Daf Yomi, all over, everybody learns Daf Yomi now. Years ago, Daf Yomi was, no one heard of Daf Yomi. At the last CMR Shas that they had in America by the Daf Yomi, so they told over an incident that Rabbi Aaron Kotler once walked into a meeting of the Vat Matzik Deli HaTorah of the Aguda, and he said, do you know what today is? And he said, no. You know what's a special day today? He said, what's special? Today was the Siyum on the Daf Yomi. None of the Rabbanim knew. Nobody was learning Daf Yomi. Rabbi Aaron Kotler was learning Daf Yomi. Most of the people were not. And now, by now, it became so popular. A lot of this, the Aguda did a lot of work on this. The Aguda sold the story of the Daf Yomi. But a lot of this, making Torah popular for the masses, a lot of this was done by Rav Soloveitchik. Until he had this influence, the rabbis would just hold sermons. They would give drushes. Drushes are also important. They would give... He insisted that the drushes also, you shouldn't talk down to the balabatim, you should elevate them to a higher level. You should explain in layman's terminology, layman's language, ideas that are important. So he insisted that you have to give drushes on a higher level. And he succeeded in getting a lot of his students to do that. So now that's a common practice by many rabbanim, even not only those who were influenced by him. He had this hashpa over all of America, that they give drushes that have more content to them, not stam superficial drushes. And the teaching is also not stam superficial, easy gemara, brachas and tainis, just stories, ayankif. No, you have to really give real shurim, but explain to the balabatim what's going on. You have to elevate the level of the balabatim. This was he insisted that we have to do this. Just like in the secular world they're doing this, they're popularizing all the ideas in chemistry and physics and biology and so on and astronomy. So we have to do the same in learning. The Medrash says a story on the Pasuk, Torah Tzivalon HaMoshe and Barosha Kihilas Yaakov, that a farmer once came into Reb Chiya's Beis Medrash and he started to scream at Reb Chiya, you're a ganav, you stole my Yerusha. So Reb Chiya looked at him, he didn't know who he was. But I'm not related to you. What do you mean I stole your Yerusha? So the Balabas said, it says, Nuchamish Torah Tzivalon HaMoshe and Barosha Kihilas Yaakov, the Torah is the Yerusha of all of Klal Yisrael. Why did you take the whole Yerusha? Why don't you share it with me? That's what we have to do. The Talmid HaChacham have to share the Torah with the masses, with the public. Torah was never intended to be esoteric only for a select group. This is a big machlekes. There are those who are opposed to Art Scroll because they published a lot about this. Art Scroll makes Torah available to the masses. That's not what it's supposed to be. Torah is only supposed to be for the select few. People have such a sheet. This Rav Soloveitchik was very opposed to that. He said, no, the Medrash says, Torah Tzivalon HaMoshe and Barosha, the Yerusha of all of Klal Yisrael, the Rabbanim have an obligation to try to transmit the Torah to everybody, to try to explain to them what Torah is all about. Very good.
The schedule is just, we'll start with 11 o'clock with Cooperman, with Jake, and with Steve. Will be in the room over there of Jake's classroom.
The guys from England should join me in the other session.